What's going on? This is your boy, Jay Will, your host of the Jay Will Podcast. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered to be a legal, health, tax, or professional advice of any kind. We're not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. You can find the Jay Will Podcast on the homepage, which is rss.com, Jay Will Podcast. To donate to the podcast, please find the donate feature on the homepage, or you may do so via Cash App, which is $ Jay Will Podcast. You can follow me on my music page, which is James Williams Music on Facebook. This podcast is brought to you by Jay Will Music Production LLC. For more information, you can contact me at Jay Will Music Production LLC at gmail.com or Lee Will the letter J at gmail.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Chris Crane and Charlie's Music Factory. For all of your production needs, go ahead and give Chris Crane a call. It's also sponsored by It's All Gospel Radio. You can listen to some of the world's greatest and most finest gospel artists, especially independent artists, on this radio station. It's allgospelradio.com. It's also sponsored by the Anointed Radio Network Podcast, which is an affiliate of the Jay Will Podcast and also a carrier of the Jay Will Podcast. For more information, please email me at jaywillmusicproductionllc.com or leewillthelletterj@gmail.com. If you're a recording artist and you would like to submit your music to the Jay Will Gospel Show or the Unsigned Artist Gospel Show, which airs on itsallgospelradio.com, please do so at the email that I've just given to you. Got a special person interview with me on tonight. You're going to love this guy. Coming to the stage is Pastor Donald Hart. How are you, sir?
I am well this evening. What about yourself,
man? Oh, I'm blessed. I'm blessed, man. And considering that I got you to do an interview with me, I'm highly favored.
I don't know about that.
Man. So where you from?
We're glad to be over South Mississippi, and this is expected to be one of the coldest nights of the year. So they expect to get down into the low 30s and the high 20s tonight. So we got one of the shelters here in the northern part of the county open tonight because they have freeze warnings and a winter alert out on tonight. So we do have one of the shelters open tonight so that people can get in out of the inclement weather.
Man. Yeah, y'all getting ready to have some pipes busting down there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, 30 degrees is not really that low of a temperature.
Right.
But when you have the relative humidity that y'all have down there, all the condensation sticks to the pipes.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Wow. So have you lived in Mississippi your whole life?
Most of my life outside of almost 10 years, I did live in Dallas, Texas. And so, I lived in Dallas, Texas. And so outside of that, I've been here.
So I'm surprised you don't have, you live in Dallas. Surprised you don't have a cowboy hat on right now.
No, I don't wear Dallas memorabilia all the time. I do have my share of Dallas memorabilia, but Not all the time, but Dallas did rub off on me while I was there. I grew up a Raiders fan. Me being a lefty, when we played on the schoolyard, I was always a Kent Stabler fan, and always liked Kenny Rogers. With him, know when to hold him and know when to fold him.
Oh yeah.
So I loved Kent Stabler though, because him being that lefty, and you didn't have many lefty quarterbacks when I was growing up. So we used to get out there with Sandlock. You had to mimic somebody. So Kent Stabler was my guy.
So I'm gonna let you keep your black card. Cause you say you like Kenny Rogers.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think everybody likes a little country music now, especially with Chapel Hart and so many other artists. Darius Rucker and so many other artists coming on the scene now with country music. And so, you know.
Now, you brought up the name. Now, you related to Temple Art, right?
Yeah. Those are my cousins.
Man. Those of y'all that hadn't, if y'all hadn't heard Chapel Heart's music, y'all need to look those young ladies up. They can really, really sing.
Oh yeah, that runs in our family with us being related, and so many that are in the family have that gift in one way or another. And I know that your brother and so many other talents that run throughout the family with Mother Helen and Lance and all throughout the family that's related in one way or another to the Hearts, the Williams and just so many that I could name in the family. Yeah. The singing, the producing, it runs deep in the family with music. So
yeah.
But so, I got left out on that aspect. I don't even try.
You got other talents that we're gonna get into in just a minute. But you're a barber?
Yeah.
So when did you become a barber? Is after you moved back to Mississippi from Texas?
No, actually I've been cutting hair since I was about 12 years old.
Oh yeah?
I started cutting hair when I was about 12 years old. I picked it up from my brother Harvey. And my brother Harvey used to cut my hair as well as other people's hair, my dad and so many others. But when he would come to the house, I would watch him. And that was before your TR liners and all those liners like that. He would line us up with the blade, you know. So he would use a double-edged razor.
Really?
He would line us up with a razor blade, was what they called it back in those days, you know. And so he would line us up with those razor blades and, you know, the soap and water. And so he would get that soap and water and soften it up and line us up with that razor blade. And so I was always fascinated with that. And so, I used to follow him and kind of watch him, how he would do that. And that steady hand and so good with it until I wanted to do that. And so did it growing up, porch barber running around the neighborhood, cutting people's hair for a dollar or two, you know.
Yeah.
And so I did it all growing up, a lot of my friends and so forth. But I could never afford to, you know, quit, working when I left home when I was 19. I did welding when I went to Pearl River Community College.
Okay.
But that's what took me to Dallas working. And so when I went over there, I knew I couldn't quit a job and try to get into barber school over there, you know. But when I moved back from Dallas, that's when I decided to take a job part-time at Walmart and hop back in school and go to barber school. Yeah. And that's when I pursued the welding. I mean, the barber career.
So you go to Texas as a welder. You come back, take a job at Walmart. Then you go to barber school. And then you graduate barber school and you open up a barbershop. And then you get married.
Yeah. I met my wife when I was in barber school. Oh, yeah. And my wife, just coincidence, had met my wife, and she's doing hair already, you know. And so I met my wife. She's already doing hair. She's a braider. She's does a lot of natural hair, a lot of natural hair designs, different things of that nature. But she does perms, relaxers, all that stuff as well. But in any event, I met her, and she's kind of in the hair business already. And so she was working at the cleaners at the time, and I promised her that she was sending me to school, starching iron, my uniform looked better than everybody else at school, you know, because she working at the cleaners, so my t-shirts and stuff be fold, man, like they came by the store every day, you know.
Yeah.
And so she can bring my stuff to the cleaners and have my stuff. Everybody was like, man, what you guys say? Don't worry about that, you know. But my wife and that presser in there working at presser at the cleaners, and I promised her, hey, you help me finish this thing with school, I'm gonna put you through school as well, you know.
Yeah.
And so by the help of the good Lord, man, we were able to accomplish our goals, and I finished school first, and then she got in Molar Beauty College over in Mandeville.
Yeah.
And she got in Molar, and Molar shut down while she was in Molar over there, and she wound up transferring. They sent their students over to the Academy of Creative Hair Design, some of them. And so she was able to finish up in Slidell. And so she finished up there, and rest is history, pretty much. Heart to Heart Barber and Style Shop was birthed through that. And we opened there on Main Street first. I was in that shop there. We were renting from Laverne Guy on Main Street. And yeah, we actually opened our location that we are in now in 2008.
Okay, okay. So, man, that's a pretty awesome testimony, man. Y'all helped each other out, but she had you starched and ironed, man.
Oh yeah, every day. Every day. Every day. My jacket, everything was, you know, clean. I'm telling you, yeah, every day. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you had to marry her, man.
Oh yeah. I'm telling you.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. How long after that did you become a pastor?
I started working in ministry over at Rosa Sharon back in 96, and deacon board, and even mentioning that about my wife, you know, I haven't mentioned to my wife, because going to Dallas, I guess I knew that I had a call to the ministry on my life, but I was bound and determined I'm not doing that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I had, gone to Dallas knowing that I didn't want to, answer this strong pull, this strong call to the ministry. And so I went to Dallas kind of rebelling like Jonah, you know, and, going to Dallas and, you know, going out there and kind of doing things the way I wanted and the way I saw fit. And, God still had his hand on me. He had grace and mercy on me. And going out there and one Sunday morning, I remember vividly that I had decided I was going to go to church this Sunday, and determining that I was going that Sunday. And I got a phone call, to come and do something else, to go, you know, to meet some people and everything. And so I changed my whole plan around. Now I'm not going to church. Now I'm going to go do this, and go take care of this other stuff and all that. And I got up, changed my plan, and I was headed to where I was going. When I was headed to where I was going, I was getting ready to get up on I-35 off Loop 12 in Dallas. And when I was getting ready to get up on I-35, I just made it as far as probably Keys Boulevard. And when I made it just about to there, my car started smoking from the vents. And when my car started smoking from the vents, and I pulled over to see what was going on, and I pulled over and I'm looking under the dash trying to figure something burning in here, something, you know. And I got under there, started looking around. I got burn marks on my hand now, you know,
for wow,
what was going on. And so I'm looking under there. I start pulling wires. Man, wires are hot, red hot. You know, they melting together in my hand, you know. And so I pulled and tried to see what was going on. And finally, this smoke was billowing now out of my vents. And so I got there's a bottle in my cup holder, and with that bottle being in my cup holder, I'm sitting up there trying to figure out what's going on. And with all this stuff happening so fast, I grab that bottle, and I'm gonna fill that bottle. There's a little ravine right off the side of the road there. and I'm going to go and try to fill that bottle with water, not knowing you can't put out electrified water. I'm just you know. So I go down in that ravine, and I'm going to try to fill that bottle up. And when I look back up on the side of the road, man, fire was standing out of my sunroof already.
Wow.
That fire had crawled up that windshield and was engulfing that headliner. And with engulfing that headliner like that, then, you know, everything was just catching so fast, you know. I can see the headliner dripping inside the car, his black Cutlass, burgundy crushed velvet interior. Beautiful car, you know.
That's a pimp car.
Beautiful car. But in any event, you know, white wall, white leather tires, you know, with the rally wheels.
You're making my case right now, right?
Beautiful car. Beautiful car. It wasn't no pimp car. It said raised white leather tires, so it had the rally wheels. So it ain't no pimp car. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So more of a sport coupe looking car. But in any event, had a big speaker in the back and all this, you know. But I sit there. I had to sit down because by now everything's catching up with no putting it out. I had to sit down on that bridge and watch that car burn.
Wow.
And God, the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, this is your life. You're burning it up.
Wow.
This is your life. You're burning it up. And while I sit there and watch that car burn, I realized that I was burning my good years. I was burning up time because everything I cared about, I had to change the clothes. I was going to meet these people. I had to change the clothes, my black book, all the things, my pager during the time of pagers now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so I had all this stuff that I cared about was in this car. And so I'm out there, before I sit down, I was out there trying to flag folks, and this guy stopped with a phone. And they had the little phones on the mount then.
Yeah.
And he told me, I already called the fire department that you need to call somebody. So I called my brother, and I called Brooke's mom, Lisa. I called her. And I told him, I got that sad story, my car burning, you know. This. So Lisa's going to be on her way. My brother going to be on their way. And while I'm sitting out there and I hear this from the Holy Spirit, the firefighter came. The firefighter called me over to the car. Confirmation that God had spoke to me on that bridge. When they called me over, he called me over. And you know them Cutlass had those little vent windows in the back. Yeah. Didn't let down or anything. But that window was melted out.
Wow.
And he was poking around in there for hot spots, and the seats melted down to the springs. And he said, come here, call me over there. And he was flipping through my Bible. The outside was scorched, but not one page was burned in that Bible.
Wow.
And chills were standing up on my neck. My arm with chills, both of us. He's like, man, somebody trying to tell you something.
Yeah.
I said, I just heard it. Sitting over there on that bridge, loud and clear. So really, that was my beginning with ministry, if you're asking me. Because God was letting me know. So I started my trek. It's time for me to get in line with what God wants me to do. And so he was letting me know that my time, everything that I had decided to do, my time was up. And so the first thing, you going to Dallas doing all this, that's what you decided to do. And when God says, if I didn't call you here, I didn't anoint you, and if you ain't anointed, you won't have no power, you know. And so I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that, I wanted to do the other guy. Says I ain't, you know. So I had to humble myself. I had to come back because I was one of these people. I'll never live back here. I never do this. I never do that. I never do the other. And so I had to humble myself. I had to come back here. And when I humbled myself, came back here, and I got under some good leadership, and I sit. And that was in 1996 when I came. I came went from deacon board, and Elder Summer's grandfather, Papa Spencer, I used to go over there and sit under the tree with the old man. He would sit on this toolage, Sunday school and all that. And he would let me speak in his Sunday school class. If you ever been in Pop Spencer's Sunday school class, you know the old man didn't play.
Right, right, right.
If you got up and spoke in his Sunday school class, you better be on point with the lesson. You better be done studied. You better bring, you know, some good subject matter to the fold.
Yeah.
Well, he was finna sit you down.
He sure would.
And so, you know, getting under his toolage, listening to all this stuff. And so went from deacon board, chairman of deacon board, minister for about a year, then going on to be an elder. But thank God for the lessons and everything, him bringing me to the place and ministry that he did, you know, because it was humbling, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And even now, you know, it's just like me being where I am now. You're continuously being a learning curve, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So how long have you been pastoring now?
I've been pastoring now since 2008. So I'm in my 17th year.
It's been that long?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
That's been a while.
Yeah.
So you built the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just recently, this November, we celebrate our first year of being, and we started November of last year. We January, we actually had our like grand opening, but we opened the doors and started having service in November.
Wow. Congratulations.
23. Appreciate it. Appreciate
yes, sir.
It. Thankful, man. Thankful. Yeah. Grateful.
So you're under Bishop Wiley?
Well, Bishop is my godfather, and you know, he's provided a covering for us that, you know, I'm grateful for, man. He is it's been dynamic as far as giving me and showing me some insight and being somebody that I can share with and providing me with insight and oversight and, you know, just grateful for him to have him in my life, you know.
Yep. So when did you decide to get into politics?
You know, that's interesting, something there too, because the politics thing was something I never even thought about, you know. But the interesting thing that happened with the politics deal was there was a guy that came by here one Saturday, and I was coming home from the shop. And when I was coming home from the shop, the guy was leaving our house. He had just knocked on our door, and our house sits on a curve.
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming around the curve, and I knew, you know, Anthony Hales.
Yeah.
I knew Anthony was, everybody, the rumor was Anthony may or may not run this last term, you know. And I knew that. And so when I saw the guy, I said, you know, thought to myself, before I would see somebody like that get this, I would run myself, you know. Just thinking to myself, never said nothing to nobody or nothing, you know. And so when, you know, some people were talking, and they would say, well, Anthony gonna run one more time, you know. So I let it go, you know. And so that 4 years went by, never said nothing. When the next time came up, same people were running again. Somebody approached me about it. I was like, I remember that last time I thought about that, just entertained the notion in my head.
Yeah.
Never spoke it out loud, never talked to my wife about it or nothing. And this lady said, you came up in a group. A group of us was together, and you came up. I was like, well, let me pray about it, and let me talk to my wife, you know. And so I talked to my wife, and we talked about it. And then I said, I want to talk to Brother Hales, you know. And so I went and talked to Brother Hales. When I went and talked to Brother Hales, he said, you know what, man? He says, I was asking God to send somebody that, you know, I could have faith in, that I would leave in this place in good hands, leaving this seat in good hands. Because, you know, they had to sue and get the Justice Department to come in 1996. Because they didn't have a majority-minority district until 1996. So they had the Voters League and all that stuff down here, and they had people that actually fought to get, you know, minority districts in throughout, you know. They have some places that still don't have minority representation in their, you know, just like to the north of us. Like Lamar County, you know, there's some places around us still don't have minority representation in their county, you know, on the Board of Supervisors. So he's like, you know, I had prayed about, you know, and so I feel like that I can rest a little easier after speaking with you, you know. I felt great that he would kind of give me that, you know, like stamp of approval, like I, you know, because it was 10 people that came out that first time. But they say that's what happens when a seat get vacated. It's like a lot of people come out, you know. And so when the election came up, because I'm still feeling some type of way, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
You don't know what's going to happen. 10 people out here, you know. But I won the election by almost 70%.
Really?
Of the vote. And so there again, God put his stamp of approval on to give me the reassurance that he's with me. And so,
what was it 2000 What year did you get elected to the Board of
Supervisors? Yeah, I had to run in 2015
okay.
to get elected 416. And so this, this is the first year of my third term.
Wow.
And for my third term, I didn't have an opponent. Thank God.
Well, so, ladies and gentlemen, just so you understand, the Board of Supervisors, he's on the Board of Supervisors for Pearl River County. And the Board of Supervisors is a legislative executor.
Yeah. Not to cut you off, but in other states, it may be, like in your state, it may be a commissioner,
okay.
county commissioners, or just like in Louisiana, they... police jurors or they call them police jurors or parish presidents, you know.
Okay. So
in different states, they call different things, you know.
But in Mississippi, they're called?
Board of Supervisors.
Board of Supervisors. Yeah. So mm-hmm. how many supervisors are on this board?
Five.
So
yeah.
I bring that up because you brought it up before that they had to bring down the state election committee because there was no minority representation on that board.
Yeah, they had to bring down the Justice Department. Justice Department, yeah.
So
they had to get the Justice Department involved.
So I was looking on the webpage, and there still seems to be only one person that's a minority on the board of sickness.
Right.
So I guess I want to ask you, how was it going from something that they had to bring down the top people to make sure this is done equally and fairly?
Now with the it's federally regulated, where that the census the way that the census is done, we all have a number that we have to have in our, and we just, you know, they just did the census again. And so we all have a number that we have to have in our district that meets the criteria for the federal level in order for the lines to be done fairly. And so when those lines get ready to be drawn, it starts with my district, and it's done around my district.
Okay, so.
But it's still, I still have to make sure that it's done fairly, because that's just like they had, you know, it's getting harder and harder for minority district to be made up in Pearl River County, because people are, more and more people are moving out into the rural areas, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it ain't no large, it ain't no large pocket of minorities living in one populated area like it used to be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, people are moving out into the, more and more people are moving out into, and the more that happens, then the more the large sales, like I just took in that area right there in Carrier, you know, that area in there by New Hebron.
Yeah.
That was the last large sale of minorities that were in Pearl River County.
So I guess in your instance, gerrymandering, it would be a good thing.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Now,
exactly. Maybe. So you know, some of that had to happen for me to get that area, but I also had to take in some areas south of that in Ozona. You know.
Right.
So you know, I had to take in some good, some bad with good. You know, so you had to take in some areas south of that to get what I wanted, you know.
Now, we often hear about the gerrymandering process, but it's always negative. But I guess people don't really look at what happens to the African-American community as a result of not being able to redistrict the lines appropriately. It would shut out the whole African-American community in that capacity, right?
Right. Yeah, because my district runs from south down in Nicholson all the way up Poplarville and out to White Sand. And see, by you being familiar with, you know, being down here, and you in the guard, right?
Uh-huh.
So you know what I'm talking about, you know.
Right.
It runs from not the very bottom of Nicholson, but the tip of Nicholson, just below where the armory was down there. It runs from there all the way up to, in some places you could live on one side of the road and be in my district, and the other side of the road you're not.
See, I never did understand that stuff, man. That's like crazy.
Yeah, but that's the way it is.
So what does a county supervisor do?
Okay, we take care of the roads, the bridges. We take care of the court system. We take care of that's circuit and chancery. So the circuit is like the voting, criminal stuff and all that stuff. So all the stuff that goes through the criminal activities and all this stuff like that. Man, if if we didn't have bad behavior in the county, we'd be sitting on nice piece of money. You know?
Hey, when you figure out that piece on how to get knuckleheads from being knuckleheads, yeah, you let me know.
Yeah, because we our medical expense alone in the county, you know, we got one of the fourth largest county in the state, but our medical expense alone, we got a private medical, rather than trying to do it ourselves, we got private medical company that comes in and take care of our medical. It runs us well into six digits, close to $500K. Take care of people that's sick in jail, you know.
Man.
Yes, sir.
What?
Yes, sir.
I think, sir, y'all got too many people in jail down there, Doc.
Mills. Well, you know, we house state and federal inmates as well.
Oh, I didn't know y'all
housed money. It's little money in that, you know, we make a little money off of doing that, but, you know, kind of helps balance things out for us, you know, because we got the room down there. But, yeah, that kind of helps. That kind of helps facility out, you know. So we kind of have to, you know, look for ways to, you know, make some money as well, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, not that I want the county to go broke.
And you got some people that don't want inmates to be out working. And I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, what they're already using up all the medical resources, eating up all the food, and they won't stop committing crimes.
You got some people you want to just sit down there and do all this stuff?
Yeah, play chess all day long?
Yeah. Yeah. But,
so,
yeah.
How many terms can you serve?
You know, we don't have any term limits. And, you know, I'm not saying it just so I could stay in office. But I'll say this. It took me 3 years to build a community center over there. And what you know, why I'm glad that and I know you voted here for a while, but I don't know exactly where you guys voted, but the voting precinct / community center that I built over here on the south side, I voted over here for a long time, and the voting precinct that we built, community center over here, we voted at Southside School. We voted at Friendship Park. We voted at the National Guard Armory twice. We were in there. They had change of command. They kicked us out. Now we were back over there again. And some voting precincts are still in there, you know. But they were in there. Change of command came. They kicked us out. Then change of command again. They let us back in there again, you know. But when you have a freestanding voting precinct, you don't have to worry about those types of things.
That's right.
And so that's what the Secretary of State want. They want us to have a freeze. So I bought that when I came in. And so on my first term, I went to this seminar in California. And that's one thing I do like to do. I like to travel and network, see what other places are doing. And they had this 3P concept, public-private partnership. And I saw in L.A. County where they had built this, man, beautiful building, 31-room courthouse. Big, huge. I ain't trying to build nothing like that. I want the concept. So industry, the private sector, and private citizens are able to come together and do this private. And that's what I did over on Beach Street.
Yeah.
And when I came back and told my guys about it on the board, well, trust me, I get some pushback now, you know. They was like, you ain't going to be able to pull that off. You ain't going to be able to pull that off. But what they were doing, they were getting ready to build a building up at the jail. And when they were getting ready to build this building up at the jail, it was going to be a little building for them to work on calls, for the inmates to work on calls. Because they had an inmate up there that was a really good mechanic. I said, look, I want that same building on Beach. It's like, 40 by 6, 2,400 square foot building. I want that same building on Beach. Well, they couldn't deny me because they finna put it up there. Just a middle building, you know. Okay, we'll give you that $50,000 seed money. But how you gonna finish the rest? I'm gonna go out and solicit money from the public and industry. Just give me a county letter here. Let me go out and do it. Okay, we'll let you do that. You ain't gonna be able to raise that much money. So they gave me that. I go out, start soliciting from different individuals. Because this lady at an MLK meeting, the lady who we named the center after, she had asked we go out and solicit money, $1,000 a family, we can build our own community center, you know.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by that she had that much faith that she, you know, felt like we could do that. Go out and start trying to do it, all that. First time out, she got shot down because somebody, you know, messed up the whole meeting. But in any event, here we are. I got a chance to do this. And I was supposed to go to this thing where these people were expanding their building. This industry was expanding their building. And I got jacked up. Somebody told me the wrong information, wrong time to be there and all that. But the guy say, hey, man. I wanted to, you know, show you around the place and all that. So he gave me his card and told me to call him if I ever need him, right? So this day I'm up in the house praying, walking around in here. And I said, I'm going to call that guy and ask him about this. I had dropped a letter off before. So I called a guy that day, told him I, you know, wanted to talk to him. Left my voicemail, really. So I'm coming back from Poplarville. He called me back, tell me he in town. And he say, okay, well, look, I'm in town today. They got a company here in Lafayette. I'm in town today, and I'm going to meet with you, you know. I go over there, meet with the guy. When I get back in town, him and the other guy, they call me in the office. I got a rendering of what I want this building to look like attached to the letter, right?
Yeah.
So I go in the office. I'm in there talking to the guys. I'm telling them, he said, okay, how you want to do this? He got a red pen. He taking the pen, start marking up the pen, all that stuff like that. Going to a couple of offices right here, this and that, conference room right here. He said, so this 2,400 square feet? I said, yeah. He said, that ain't big enough. He wrote 5,000 in the middle of it. I said, what about 5,000 square feet? I sit back in my chair. I said, yeah, that'd be nice. You know? See, these conference rooms, he said, you gotta have some bathrooms and all this stuff, man. Man, you need a commercial kitchen in this place, you know?
Yeah.
All this stuff. Man. Then I did finish writing all this stuff down. He said, why don't you let us build this building for you?
Wow. So they built a building for you.
I said, man, you got to be kidding me. He said, we've been trying to put our footprint here, let people know we're going to be here. They read over there off Martin Luther King. We've been trying to put our footprint here, let people know we're going to be here. We want to do something in the community.
Wow.
Let us build this building for you. That's the good hand of God, man.
Wow.
That ain't nothing but the good hand of God.
Yeah. What I can't understand, let's go back. Because they was getting ready to build an automotive center for one inmate that was good. They plan on keeping him there the rest of his life?
Well, the shop going to be there. The shop going to be there regardless. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The shop going to be there regardless because they got an inside thing. They've been washing cars out there in the weather and all this stuff like that. So they got a place where they can pull cars inside and wash them and change the oil and different stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they got that's what they building that for, you know. But my thing is this, is that whenever something getting ready to jump off, you got to have your ear peeled and all that stuff like that. And sometimes I leave with stuff just to say that, hey, I'm going to ask. I'm going to put it out there because I don't care. I'm bold enough to ask. And yeah. Sooner or later, y'all going to realize it's like a Nehemiah anointing. The hand of God is good on me, and I got letters from the king.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, what functions outside of voting does the community center do?
Maybe? Man, we got several things going on over there right now. Like I told you a while ago, we just submitted a grant to this. Deal to this Maximus Foundation to try and get some things done through them, because I'd like to see some more things be done here in the city. And with that, and so, let's see, we got, people are able to rent the building out. And so, you know, they always use it for the MLK committee, that little after thing that they have.
Yeah.
They use it for that. And so, early Head Start, they use it. They have, they different classes and different things over there. Youth workforce, we got classes going on over there now where that the youth are able to get their high school equivalency, and then they're able to pilot them onto jobs, and they pay the first 600 hours. That's through Southern Mississippi Planning Development District. I'm going to tell you how the Lord worked, man. There again, how the Lord worked. I was able to get some funding after Katrina. You know, that's how I was able to build my building through some low interest SBA money. But SMPDD, Southern Mississippi Plan Development District, was one of the people that were loaning that SBA money out. And so me and Patrick both were able to take advantage of those monies that were out there. And I was trying to tell anybody that would listen, because this was a go zone after Katrina, you know.
Yeah.
And so with that being the case, you know, we were able to get our shop built. Our bank had never heard about it, you know what I'm saying? Because what they would do would come in behind the bank and guarantee the loan, you know. And you get a lower interest rate. And my wife being a minority, she double minority, you know. And so you get a lower interest rate with her being on the loan, right? So here it is. I get on the Board of Supervisors. And with you being on the Board of Supervisors, they have a spot that comes open on the Board of Supervisors for SMPDD to have somebody sit on their board of directors for each of the lower 15 counties.
Huh.
So I get on the Board of Supervisors, and nobody don't want to sit on the Board of Directors for SMPDD. Because everybody conservative, they don't like grants, programs, and different things of that nature. So, you know, I'm honored. I'm honored to sit on there.
Yeah, yeah.
These folks done helped me out, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were talking about kicking them out the county at one time.
Really?
Yeah, them old ladies over there at the senior center, over there of L Patch, over there buying the car dealership over there.
Yeah.
Them old ladies loaded up in a van, came up there to our meeting.
So, but now you know, ladies and gentlemen, I grew up in Southern Mississippi, and all of Mississippi counties, those little small counties, they still stuck on some Jim Crow stuff.
Yeah, they conservative. they didn't want they were for the kick up. So they started doing a snapshot of all that they do for the county. So the Meals on Wheels and the senior center, them people go over there and eat every day and have the activities on. They take care, they do all that stuff. So them ladies came over there, what are y'all doing? But they were finna take their funding, and for the 60-something thousand dollars that we invest into SMPDD, the veteran stuff, all the different stuff that they do, we get about $1.2 million actual dollars back into the county through that agency. Grant dollars.
And they trying to get rid of
it. I mean,
I'll take that $1.2 million.
I know what to do with
it. I know exactly what to do with it.
But that's just a little bit, Department of Human Services, Breast Cancer Awareness, the Bobby E. Nixon Breast Cancer Awareness Foundation, the Civic Women's Club. They got all kind of groups, black and white, that use that center over there now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The Lower Pearl Valley Foundation, Chamber of Commerce, they done had their meeting over there, the Masonics group. But that's that grant that I told you I was working on, that we just submitted a grant to the Maximus Foundation to try and get some monies from them.
So this may be a crazy question, but how do you think everything that you went through in life prepared you to be the leader that you are now? Because I mean, obviously you're getting a lot done in the community. You've been being elected since 2014. You've been in office. People keep electing you.
Yeah.
2015. They keep saying, "Hey, we want more heart. Let's give us more heart."
But Jan, I'm humbled by it, and I always remind myself to remain humble, because I know that these people could get anybody. They could get anybody they want, and I keep reminding myself to remain humble, because it's servanthood. And you asked me something else about the term limits too. I'm really glad it's not. Because I started off talking about the center, and like I was saying, it took 3 years to build that thing. Because, COVID happened,
Right, right, right.
And with that happening, got stalled, got bogged down, and all that stuff like that. And so with that happening, and getting stalled and bogged down and stuff, you get set back after set back. But I'm thankful and grateful about a lot of things, but with servanthood, and all these things, it takes so long to get things done in government.
Yeah.
And so if you do get chop blocked, let's say I get in there one term, the center don't get built. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
If I don't have that second term, but because I didn't get started on it until like 2.5 years into it, so that next term, if I ain't got that next term to get it completed, then, there you go, And so that's just like some of the roles that I'm trying, we got 1,110 miles of roads to take care of. 856, we get like 300 and some of those roads. State aid, we get state aid with 856 miles we have to take care of on our own.
Yeah.
Now we got tractors and all that stuff. How fast and how much road do you think a tractor going up and down, gets taken care of in the run of a day or a week or something, you know?
Right, right.
And so it take a long time to get around in your district and take care of things and keep things mold with the weather and different things and breakdowns. And so things just go slow, man. They were, it's worse than turtle speed, you know?
But it's a race of endurance.
Yeah, exactly. It don't go to the swift or the strong. It's, you got to be able to endure, you know?
Now, do you see yourself running for mayor or anything like that?
You know, people keep saying that, and I don't see it, but I didn't see this, you know? So I can't say, you know, never say never. But, you know, I certainly don't see it at this point, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, I bet you in 1965, they didn't see a black man being on the board of supervisors.
Right. Because I could show you some of the pictures up there. And like I said, until Anthony came along, ain't nothing up there that looked vaguely like us, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you. It, you know, I've always admired your work, always been very fond of your ambition and just your willingness to just try to get stuff done. And I'm, you know, for what it's worth, I know you're a whole lot older than me, but I'll say I'm proud of you, sir.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. You always had the tenacity to get things done as well. And so, you know, you as well have always been a go-getter. So,
well, I appreciate
guess it's in the genes.
Yes, sir. Hey, don't hang up. don't go just yet. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been talking to the supervisor, Donald Hart, Pastor Donald Hart. Look him up on his, give him an email. Shoot him an email. Let him know what you think. It's dhart@ pearlrivercounty.net. What is it? What is your email?
Yeah, that's it. dhart@pearlrivercounty.net.
Hey, man. Oh, man. Cognitive thinking. I can still think a little bit.
Yeah.
And look him up on his Facebook. And it's just Donald Hart. You'll see the nice young man standing there with his wife. That picture in the field that you guys took, man, that's a fantastic picture.
Hey, I appreciate it. My granddaughter, my granddaughter did that, Jay.
Is that right?
Yeah, she did. She aspiring to do several things. So we're trying to keep her encouraged. Whatever, told her, sky's the limit. Whatever you want to do, you can do.
That's right.
Yep.
All right, give me 1 second. Don't hang up, though. Don't hang up. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Pastor Donald Hart. Hope you enjoyed this segment. Listen, maybe you got a story you'd like to tell. Go ahead and hit me up at LeeWillTheLetterJ@gmail.com or JWillMusicProductionLLC@gmail.com. And I want to hear your story. You might be in politics. You may be a doctor. You may be a nurse. Just hit me up. Let me know what's going on. This has been brought to you by J. Will Music Production LLC and also Chris Crane at Charlie's Music Factory. Don't forget to hit me up. All right, until the next time, may the Lord God bless and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you, and may the Lord God give you peace. Holla.